There we go. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Are you both ready? You can nod. You don't have, okay. Welcome. We're here for oral argument, and we are doing this via Zoom, as you know. And if at any time you're having problems hearing one of us, or we have problems hearing either of you, just let us know and we will try to get it resolved as quickly as we can. As I'm sure you both know, you each have 15 minutes for your main argument, and then with the relator having 5 minutes for rebuttal at the end. We have our fancy new timer system available now, finally on Zoom. And so if there are no other questions and everybody's ready to go, Marshall, will you, and just please identify yourself for the record, because we will, as we typically do, have an oral recording available, and posted on our website after the argument. And Marshall, will you go ahead and call us into session and call our case?
Yes, the Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Reyes, and Judge Jessen, the Honorable Chief Judge Susan L. Siegel presiding. This is case A201178 in the matter of Diana Murak.
All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Thomas. Just identify yourself for the record, and when you're ready, go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Charles Thomas with Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services. I'm here today representing the relator, Diana Murak. May it please the court. Relator is asking to get a hearing on a denial of unemployment benefits. This would be a routine case, but we're in the midst of unusual times. We're in the midst of a global pandemic, and since March 2020, some 10 months ago, our governor has issued a number of emergency executive orders. These orders have provided methods and taken steps to deal with the multitude of issues and problems that this virus is causing. One of those pandemic problems in Minnesota is the unemployment of hundreds of thousands of workers. Today, this court has to look at one of those executive orders, number 2005, issued on March 16th. Its purpose is to help to deal with provisions in current law and regulations that are viewed as preventing immediate relief to unemployed workers. The relevant parts of that March order remain in effect unchanged today. Relator's appeal was dismissed as untimely, and she was untimely under the 20-day standard that the statute requires. The law is pretty clear. If you're untimely, you get no hearing. This is an absolute standard according to the unemployment law judge's memorandum. There's no exceptions. And Relator is not really disputing this part of the law. One doesn't see in the law in Minnesota a deadline much more strict than this 20 days that applies to unemployment appeals. Now we've got an executive order. And the language, plain language of that order says strict compliance with Chapter 268 is suspended. That's paragraph one. Strict compliance with Chapter 268 is waived and suspended. That's paragraph seven. Now it's clear that the unemployment law judge did not consider this language or even mention it in the decision. So why does suspending strict compliance with an absolute time limit not do enough work to get Relator a hearing despite her untimely appeal?
So Mr. Thomas, if I may, just given our limited
Yes.
time. So the department in their brief seems to at least implicitly say, assume that this statute is ambiguous, and they put forward, I think it's pages 10 to 14 of their brief, kind of parade of horribles, what's gonna happen if this occurs, and including, I think after that, they argue they could risk losing federal funding. Could you specifically address that for us?
So first, we don't think it's ambiguous. Now, it's broad. and there may be some discretion required in order to implement this executive order. We are not arguing, Relator is not saying that the entire statute must be thrown out the window. That's not even what the order says. The order says strict compliance is suspended. So there's still some kind of compliance. And it's, I guess I would agree that there could be some discretion exercised on how much do we slacken strict compliance, how little, how far, for what reasons. We don't have any indication that the department exercised the discretion in denying this relator the hearing.
So, Mr. Thomas, if I may follow up on that, I mean, you're acknowledging that some discretion may be called for. And yet, when I read your brief, I say you're saying that you want us to remand this for a hearing so that your client can establish, I think you said, use the words, good cause. So my question is, and tell me if I'm misrepresenting your position on this, because I'm like, well, do we then say, well, strict compliance means people have an opportunity to use good cause? Or, you know, I mean, assuming we agree with you, do we need to send us back to the department for them to exercise that discretion? Do we set the standard for what, you know, something less than strict compliance means? What do we, would we say on remand?
All that's needed in this case is to say that the plain language of this order does not allow the department to keep enforcing an absolute time limit. That's all the relief that we need. There could be many scenarios where the department will be called on to exercise discretion. I could talk about some of those. But the department did not. Their position has been, we can't allow the brief. The order doesn't allow that. Not, it does, but we've considered some reasonable factors and decided we're not going to exercise the discretion in this case. So we're not reviewing that kind of a discretionary decision. There could be other situations which could come before this court. But the order, that's the decision that's in front of us from the unemployment law judge has to stand or fall on the reasoning in that order. The department's arguments in the brief and their position for how they could interpret this, that's not what we're reviewing because that's not what happened. And I don't think it's proper to send it back, have them deny the hearing again and have us come up on an abuse of discretion review. Why should they get a do-over? They made a decision. We think it's wrong based on the plain language of the order and it should be reversed. There may be another case where we can say, how did you exercise your discretion under this order? We don't know how long this is going to last, how long the strict compliance waiver is going to be a viable claim. But I think that during this pandemic and under that language, continuing to absolutely bar people who appeal on the 21st, 30th, 35th, 40th day, that is not that's not a tenable position in light of this plain language. Now, I think we dealt in our brief with the parade of horribles that the department talks about, potentially losing federal funding, and that seems very far-fetched. I think even the federal department would be a little bit understanding of how a state would try to deal with unemployment during the pandemic. There's been no indication that other states are running into problems. And as we pointed out, outside the pandemic situation, other states have different, longer, good cause provisions for their unemployment appeal times. They're not losing federal funding. So that's really a red herring. The department seems to say that we're saying every part of the law is suspended. And that's not our claim. Strict compliance is what's suspended. And when you've got an absolute time limit, we don't think that you can maintain that strict compliance still is the law.
Mr. Thomas, if I could jump in and interrupt just for a minute. So in looking at Executive Order 2005, how do you read paragraphs 1 and 7? Do they cover different things? I mean, is 7 or is 1 subsumed in 7? Because it talks about other provisions that are inconsistent with this executive order are waived and suspended in paragraph 7. And then paragraph 1 just deals with strict compliance being suspended. So tell me how you read those two paragraphs.
So I didn't get to draft this order, but paragraph 1 does very clearly say strict compliance is suspended. Then the order goes in paragraphs 2 through 6 and modifies several specific statutes, not by weakening strict compliance, but in fact, changing them entirely. The suspending the non-payable week, they didn't just reduce it to 3 or 4 days, they suspended it altogether. The suitable employment definition was not just slackened, it was changed, and so forth. These other ones, it looks to me as though the change that the governor wanted could not be achieved within the suspending strict compliance language. Now, paragraph 7, it does repeat most of what is in paragraph 1, but it also adds any other provisions in other Minnesota statutes or rules. And so it's a bit more comprehensive. And it does seem clear, although the department, I don't think, has said this, but it does seem as though this gives the department a big tool bag of abilities to modify the law in order to not stiff arm claimants who are trying to get into the unemployment system. And that is what that is there for. Again, it could be redundant. I would also point out there's probably been 100 executive orders issued since this one in March. If there was something untoward or unhelpful or wrong about this order, it seems like it could have been changed, or it could yet be changed if the department were to go to the governor and say, we have a problem. So I don't think the sky will fall if the executive order is implemented. And if it were to fall, the governor could step in and try to change that.
Mr. Thomas, I have a few questions for you. First, you take issue with the ULJ not even addressing Executive Order 20-05. Was this issue raised before the ULJ?
Your Honor, no. The claimant did not raise it. The order, however, was issued in March, and it's directed to Chapter 268. And so between March and August, when the unemployment law judge made that decision, somehow that word should have gotten down to the unemployment law judge that there had been a change. The department could have avoided this controversy by taking action in March and instructing its department, its unemployment law judges, how to deal with this executive order. There was nothing. And as I said, the department's position weakened a little bit in their brief has been, we don't have the authority. This is still an absolute time limit. You're done. I can't explain their position, but I don't think that their position is consistent with the executive language and the order of the executive
language. Okay. And another question I have for you, it kind of is a follow-up to the whether paragraphs 1 and 7 are redundant, and we're not supposed to read any, assuming we apply the rules of statutory construction for the sake of argument, we don't read any provisions to be redundant or unnecessary. So I think we need to read 7 as having some effect. And when I read it, it talks about strict compliance will prevent, hinder, or delay necessary actions under the executive's order. So how would not enforcing strict compliance with a 20-day appeal filing deadline, how would that prevent, hinder, or delay necessary action under the executive order?
So, Your Honor, I want to just reverse what you said. Paragraph 7 does say, because strict compliance would prevent, hinder, or delay necessary action, so forth, those provisions are waived and suspended. It does not say only those provisions are waived and suspended which the department feels prevent, hinder, or delay. The purpose clauses are not written into the operative language of this order. So the fact that these two provisions, 1 and 7, might repeat each other, they're not being, redundancy is not the same as surplusage. We're not reading them out. The department is the one that's reading these provisions out and giving them absolutely no effect. So the fact that the governor said this twice, I think maybe emphasizes that this is what we intend to do, to not let these provisions interfere with people trying to access the unemployment system.
So do I understand your position to say that because through executive order, comma, portion, that's more a preface and it's just reiterating what had already been stated in paragraph one?
Yes, and it even restates the purpose language that precedes the first paragraph of the order, which says the governor saying, this is the situation we're in. This is my authority under section 1231. These are the purposes that I want to serve with this executive order. Now I order. And again, we would be okay. Relator's claim would be okay with just paragraph one or with just paragraph seven. I don't think her claim is weaker if both provisions are looked at. Lastly, again, just one more comment. The department, I think, would be able to exercise discretion. This executive order could have been written to say, if a claimant has some COVID-related reason for being late, we will suspend strict compliance. But the department doesn't even go that far. It just says the time limit remains absolute. That position we think is wrong as a matter of the plain language. We would ask that the court reverse this order and remand for a prompt hearing.
Great, thank you, Mr. Thomas. And Ms., is it Froelich or Froelich?
Froelich.
Froelich, all right. Please identify yourself and proceed. You have 15 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ann Froelich and I represent the respondent in this case, the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. We ask this court to affirm the dismissal the ULJ issued because Ms. Marek filed her appeal outside the 20-day statutory deadline. Imagine, if you will, that you lost your job in March or April of 2020. The department determined that you were eligible for benefits based on your separation for employment. Now imagine that your employer appeals that determination today. You have a hearing scheduled in late March or April, and after that hearing, the unemployment law judge reverses your eligibility. You're now overpaid tens of thousands of dollars and legally required to pay all of that money back promptly. That will happen if the appeal deadline is waived. We have such cases in front of us right now.
So Ms. Froelich, I have to stop you right there.
Yes.
Because Amy, that argument and what I think referred to as a parade of horribles from pages 10 to 14 in your brief, plus your position on risking federal dollars is all premised upon suspending the appeal deadline, doing away with that. And that's not what the appellant is asking us to do or what the executive order says, which talks about, no, we're suspending strict compliance with it. That's very different from the assumption that you're making here, it strikes me, but tell me where I'm wrong, that it would be suspending the deadline altogether.
So that was what we thought Relator argued in the initial brief until the final paragraph when they argued for a hearing on good cause. Our understanding was that they were arguing for a suspension of the deadline totally. And that is one of the reasons we think that this is so unclear, is that there was an argument for a suspension of the deadline totally. Then there was the request for a good cause exception in the conclusion of the initial brief. And then in the reply brief, it argues for some sort of other appropriate limitations.
So, Ms. Froelich, if I may, I mean, that's not the way I read the brief. That's certainly not what Mr. Thomas, I think you would agree, just argued. So could you address the argument that, and I know this is all expedited, but could you address the argument he's making here today, at least?
That it should be changed, that deed should have discretion to modify it into something else.
Well, I think there's a difference between saying, does the executive order suspend strict compliance with the 20-day deadline and saying, does the executive order suspend the deadline altogether? And you seem to be saying one thing, having all of your arguments premised on, well, this would be suspending the deadline altogether, which is not at least what I just heard Mr. Thomas say. So I'm asking you to address it.
So the definition of waive is to refrain from insisting on or to forgo, and suspending is to interrupt or postpone. What Mr. Thomas is requesting with some sort of good cause extension or an extended deadline is a modification or an alteration. There's been no guidance by the executive order itself, legislation, anywhere else for what this change should look like. And if we had done some sort of modification, as Mr. Thomas mentioned, such as a 45-day deadline, they would still be up here arguing that we had an unpromulgated rule with no support. This is any change we make will be fundamentally arbitrary and capricious without such guidance. And in fact, if we shorten the deadline, say 5 or 10 days, that's actually more consistent with the executive order, which is trying to get the people paid who are supposed to be paid sooner and trying to get immediate relief. And
your position, if I understand it, I just want to make sure, is the department does not have the authority to suspend the strict compliance, to have good cause exceptions.
It has the authority to suspend strict compliance, but it doesn't have the authority to make up something else. There's been no guidance as to what should replace that strict compliance. And there's other areas of the law where it makes more sense to loosen strict compliance, and there's something else there.
Emergency rulemaking, or bulletins or guidance. I mean, there are a host of ways departments issue guidance, as I'm familiar with. You didn't try to do any of that.
I'm not aware of any rulemaking that's gone forward on this point. I unfortunately can't speak definitively to that, but I'm not aware of it as to how to make that go forward. And we weren't aware that this was an issue until this case came up some months into the pandemic. And as Judge Reyes mentioned, this was not addressed to the unemployment law judge, that this particular applicant thought that the executive order should apply to the appeal deadlines. So it's not that the judge didn't consider it.
But Ms. Froelich, shouldn't Deed be aware of an executive order that would affect processes that Deed implements?
Deed was aware of the executive order. What Deed was not aware of is that the executive order affected the 20-day deadline.
The order says that strict compliance with Chapter 268 is suspended. And one of the provisions in Chapter 268 is the 20-day appeal deadline that requires strict compliance. So it seems that that would be one that would definitely stand out when it says strict compliance is hereby suspended for all of Chapter 268, and the 20-day deadline is a deadline that under prior rules requires strict compliance. That seems to address that directly.
My question then is, what comes next? If strict compliance is suspended, there's nothing left in its stead. There's nothing to explain. Is it the 20 days that is the strict compliance is suspended? Is it the number that's a problem? Or is it something else? Is it how the appeal is filed? I'm sorry, my screen is frozen on my end. Can you still all hear me?
We can still see
you. Okay, we can hear you, yeah.
So sorry about that. Is strict compliance, is it a day deadline? Is it that number? Is it how the appeal is processed? Is it something else? There's just nothing left to show what Deed should have done instead of that number.
Well, I agree with you. Well, let me ask you this question. You argue that the executive order is ambiguous, but in order for us to find ambiguity, there has to be two or more reasonable interpretations of the statute. And if not, then we apply the plain and unambiguous language of the statute. Looking at paragraph one, for example, it just says strict compliance with Chapter 268 is suspended. So Relator has proposed one interpretation, just a plain language. What would be the other reasonable interpretation that you think is there?
We think the ambiguity comes from the application. And I would argue that Relator has in fact proposed more than one alternative.
But that's a different issue in terms of how it's applied. I agree that it doesn't provide guidance in terms of how it should be applied, but that's different than interpreting what it means. And it means that from this point, effective immediately, strict compliance with Chapter 268 is suspended.
I see what you're saying. I think there's still unclear as to what is left instead of it. Relator concedes that there is still some level of compliance suspended in paragraph one, but what that level of compliance is unclear. And I agree with where I think you were going earlier that paragraph seven in fact says something different. It's not suspending or waiving strict compliance. It's waiving the provisions entirely that are inconsistent with this order. And that's where our argument comes in, that this the appeal deadline provision is not inconsistent with this order. The appeal deadline provision doesn't actually pay people in and of itself. Extending appeal deadlines creates uncertainty for those who have been paid that the money might get clawed back. And extending appeal deadlines would delay when a hearing is scheduled, and so further push out when somebody who could have their eligibility reversed, it pushes that time period out. So it actually doesn't help paid applicants or unpaid applicants.
Well, you're getting into the more kind of the policy and what would result, but isn't the intent of this clear that it's intended to help applicants in during this pandemic, and strict compliance with it, I think could very easily be interpreted as something that could potentially hurt applicants. And shouldn't there be some alternative that deed should apply to the strict compliance, especially when the executive order says you don't need to enforce that strict 20-day deadline anymore?
But changing the appeal deadline will only help as many applicants as it could potentially hurt.
But that's going to happen no matter what. I mean, right now, the 20-day deadline can potentially hurt as many applicants as it helps. And in fact, I think a good argument could be made that it probably hurts more applicants than not.
More than 800,000 applicants have been paid at least 1 week of unemployment benefits. There have been more than $9.6 billion paid in unemployment benefits during 2020. So a little bit we're kind of guessing, but I think there are real cases in which employers have filed late appeals in which the applicant's eligibility very well may be reversed. And when this executive order is intended to create economic security, when it's intended to help get people paid who should be paid, the thought of expanding the executive order to apply to something that's at least unclear to expand the appeal deadline is unfair and somewhat cruel to applicants who have been relying on that 20 days passing.
Isn't that argument better geared toward the governor, toward the executive branch? I mean, all our role is simply to interpret the executive order. And it's really not for us to say, well, you know, we think it should be applied this way or it should be applied that way, but to look at the order as it exists right now. It exists now, let me come back to my earlier question. What is, can you provide another reasonable alternative interpretation of the rule the executive order, I should say, as it has been promulgated?
On paragraph one you're talking about?
Yes.
No, I understand what you're saying. On paragraph one, I think it's the application or the implementation that creates the ambiguity. But I would still argue that under paragraph seven, which only waives and suspends those provisions that are inconsistent with the executive order, I would argue that this is indeed consistent with leaving the appeal deadline as it stands is consistent with the executive order, and delaying the appeal deadline or extending it in any way is not consistent. It creates delay, and the appeal process in itself doesn't get people paid. People would only get paid if it's reversed.
If I can interrupt for a minute, but it gives them the opportunity for those who've been denied and for those who have even been collecting unemployment when the decision may be reversed by a later appeal by the employer. To the extent they have to pay it back, it would be paid back on some kind of payment schedule. So they would get the benefit of these funds now during the pandemic, correct? I mean, homes, right?
No.
I mean, kind of a payment schedule that they can afford going forward. So I'd say even those people are in a better shape, you know, than they would be. So I don't see how it's negative. I don't. I mean,
if you ask them, one of the common complaints we get at unemployment is, why did you pay me if I wasn't eligible?
Right. No. I understand that. But again, I think that's likely a policy question rather than actual interpretation of the words in the executive order. Other questions since Ms. Froelich, and then we'll let her summarize. Go ahead, Judge Reyes.
Go ahead, Judge Jessen. She had her hand up first.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Ms. Froelich, I just wanted to come back to what you were saying about unpromulgated rulemaking. Is there nothing in this myriad of executive orders the governor has issued during the pandemic that give departments and agencies the ability to implement those executive orders? Maybe that is something that if we get input from the Attorney General's office, they could say, because otherwise, I just fear that this could look like, well, where we agree with the executive order, what the executive order is telling us to do, then we're going to implement it, probably without taking 18 months of rulemaking, where we don't, we're going to say we don't have that authority. So, I mean, is there?
I don't have an answer for that. I'm sorry.
It just seems unlikely to me that the governor would say, agencies, here are these, you know, these executive orders, but tie your hands entirely, but I haven't.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
But I haven't pierced through every single one of those executive orders either. So
I have not looked through all of them. I will say, in my time's up, that the other sections listed in this particular executive order and many of the other executive orders I've read are very specific, and they wouldn't require this kind of broad, this kind of rulemaking to narrow the really broad language of the executive order. And I've gone over my time, so thank you.
Judge Reyes said, feel free to go ahead, and we can allow Mr. Thomas a little extra time if need be.
Yeah, I did have one additional question. You'd mentioned that you thought that paragraph 7 was inconsistent, but it seems that it's not, because you've got paragraph 1, which we agree is plain and unambiguous. And then the preface, the very first phrase of that sentence basically just reiterates paragraph 1, and then just says, but then seems to actually broaden out by saying those provisions and any other provisions that are inconsistent with this executive order are waived and suspended. So it actually seems to take paragraph 1 and expand upon it.
But only my reading of it is only with regard to the provisions that prevent, hinder, or delay necessary action, and then the provisions that are inconsistent. So my reading of it is, you have to say that the 20-day appeal deadline would prevent, hinder, or delay necessary action, which it wouldn't. It would actually delay action, and then be inconsistent. And so if the purpose is to pay people who are unemployed through no fault of their own, the appeal process in and of itself is not the mechanism to do that. Changing the eligibility requirements is the mechanism to do that.
But I don't, that reading doesn't seem to make sense. The way you're reading it would be if it was written, if any provisions would prevent, hinder, or delay necessary action inconsistent with this executive order. That's not what that phrase says. It says, because strict compliance with chapter 268 will prevent, hinder. So it's talking about why strict compliance with chapter 268, what will happen if strict compliance with chapter 268 is enforced. It's not, do you see where I'm going?
I think you're talking about waiving the whole statute. That's the conclusion I get from that reading, is that those provisions, chapter 268, and any other provisions that are inconsistent are waived. So now I don't know what we have left. All right, go.
Yep. And I'll leave it at that.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Froelich and Mr. Thomas. Looks like the clock's ready. And if again, if you need, you know, an extra minute or two, we will allow it. So go ahead, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I see that there is a reference to good cause at the end of our principal brief. And again, I think some of this is just perhaps a lack of imagination on Dean's part. If strict compliance is suspended, the department could have said, here are our criteria now. Instead of strict compliance, we'll allow this. We will consider good cause, as many other states do.
But Mr. Thomas, how do you respond to Ms. Froelich's argument that they have to go through rulemaking? I mean, they would need another emergency. I mean, how do you respond to that? I mean, how do they exercise that discretion without being hit on the other side by saying, wait a minute, what's your authority for that?
It could be that if those rulemaking statutes are inconsistent with the thrust of this executive order, that they might be suspended and waived as well, so that they could issue an emergency rule that says, here's how we're going to do this. Department can also make decisions on a case-by-case basis. And as they do that, they can apply to the next case. For this, the concern over the amounts of overpayments, that's another statute that could be suspended. Strict compliance could be suspended so that all those overpayments are not collected if they result from a late employer appeal. The department could decide that for an individual who has been disqualified for misconduct or voluntary quit, that they need not go and find another job during this pandemic and earn the $1,500 to requalify and then draw again. They could say, we're going to only require $100 or $0, 8 weeks. They could do something less than strict compliance with the overpayment collection system. You know, there's a lot of discretion that could be exercised under the broad language of this order, and the department has not done that.
Mr. Thomas, I mean, there's a lot of strict compliance requirements in Chapter 268. Are you arguing that we should interpret this order to waive all of them, or are you only arguing the specific one that you're raising here?
All we need to have this court do is say that for this or later, the 20-day time limit can no longer be strictly enforced, not as an absolute time limit. That may let other people in. There could be other situations where another applicant is going to raise with the department, how about giving me some leniency on this? Why not slack and strict compliance with this requirement? And that could be a lot of things that they could do. The court does not need to address every eventuality, but only the case that's in front of it. And maybe that will spur the department to think about how they could use this executive order authority to remove some of the barriers or the strict compliance things that are problematic. And that, again, the case reports are full of people who have run afoul of one provision or another, and the court has said, that's too bad, it's a harsh result, but that's the law. This, at least during this pandemic, might be a time for the department to exercise some of this discretionary authority. But it was not required for this court to explain all the contours of that or to say what all they could do. The department could do that in some other case.
What about Mr. Thomas, Ms. Froelich's argument that first of all, the executive order does not explain how that discretion should be exercised, and they could potentially be caught in a catch-22 where they exercise discretion, it gets appealed back up to us, and then arguments are made that they exercise their discretion arbitrarily and capriciously, and therefore we should again reverse and remand. Aren't they put in a catch-22 position here because they're not given any guidance as to how they should exercise their discretion?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think, again, if I were to be the deed commissioner, I think I would set out some reasoning behind how discretion is being applied on a specific statutory change that's being made. that's not listed here, or some other thing, as I've suggested. It could be it's too difficult for people to get a new job and requalify now. We're going to not require strict compliance with that $1,500 re-earning requirement. There's reasons that could be tied into the COVID pandemic to justify that. So I don't think they're in a catch-22. I think they have a lot of authority that they have not used.
All right. Any further questions, Judge Reyes or Judge Jessen? And do you want to, is there anything additional you'd like to add in wrapping up, Mr. Thomas?
Just one thing I made a note on. The relator was pro se in her proceedings in front of the department, so did not have an opportunity to, she was not aware of the executive order. Again, I don't think that's a fault on her. I think the department had an opportunity to consider this because the order was out there and had been for months before the unemployment law judge had this case come in front of them. This is not the only individual who's filed a late appeal subsequent to March. So I don't think the department can claim surprise. I think this court should implement the plain language, reverse this decision, and send this back for hearing on the merits. Thank you.
Thank you. And as Judge Jessen mentioned, on Friday we did issue an order asking if the Attorney General would like to take a position in this case. We gave them until this Friday to submit something with an opportunity for the parties and to respond to that. And I think the order says that we'll deem the case submitted as of the 27th of this month. And we know this is an expedited matter and we are in the middle of a pandemic. And so we will get to this as quickly as we can. And thank you both for your arguments today. It's been very helpful to us. And once we hear back one way or the other from the Attorney General and with an opportunity for both of you to respond, if they do take a position, the case will then be deemed to be submitted at that time. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.